Blog Talk Radio. Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, and my co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, every morning, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we connect with women everywhere. Together, we can heal our world. But first, we need to heal ourselves. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and be a part of our discussion. 347-539-5639. Good morning, and thank you for listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, and I want you to call in and join our discussion. Of course, if you're listening online, give us a call at 347-539-5639. That's 347-539-5639. Press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. And, of course, make sure that there are no devices on in your house so that we can hear you clearly. And we want to make sure that you remember to mute your phone if there's anything that you have to do that might, in fact, create some background noise. These microphones are very sensitive, so we do want to make sure everybody is heard clearly. And we want to congratulate all of our fathers who celebrated Father's Day yesterday. It was quite a touching scene. Many places I went to, you know, people were taking their father out to dinner or lunch or just a day in the park. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing to watch a family. And everybody in the family has a place. You know, fathers always make a difference when it comes to feeling that you've got that person that's the head of the family that is making you feel complete. And there's a special place for fathers. You know, we always have that debate when we have single mothers raising children. Well, you know, they're both mother and father. Shouldn't they get recognition as a father? And shouldn't they, maybe you should give them a Father's Day card because they've been the one that have been there when the man wasn't there. Well, you know, the reality is that you really can't take the place of a father because a mother can only be a mother, but a father does some specific things that makes a difference in a child's life. There's a different energy, and we know that there is a difference between male energy and female energy. And a father has a specific role in a family. Often, people are raised by a man who is not their biological father, but in fact, that person has been the father figure in their lives. So if you have raised a child or been the father figure in the life of a child, we want you to give us a call and tell us your experience in influencing a child. Give us a call, 347-539-5639. And, of course, we want to welcome back our co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams. We certainly had you in our prayers on Friday, and we thank you for your diligence in returning this morning. How are you?
I feel fabulous, and I thank you for the energy of your prayers, all of you who lift me up, and I do thank you because that's part of my healing is the vibration of prayer and conscious, successful, positive energy. So I just thank you for that. I had eye surgery, and I could see. And I thank God for all of you, and I miss you, too, and I thought about you. But it's just a wonderful thing. Let's say that as we walk this human journey and deal with the technology of the blessing of being here in America, where we can deal with the medical field and its technology that helps us to recover on the human level. There is a positive to the medical field that is very helpful to us on the physiological level. And the eye surgery and the correcting the vision is just wonderful. And I'm just grateful for that. So now both eyes have been done. This was the right eye, and I can see. Thank God, and thank you for your prayers.
Yeah, so that is a blessing. And we were talking about the whole healing aspect of the body on Friday, and the fact that our bodies are designed to heal, that we're actually made to self-heal. So any real spiritually connected kind of a treatment it should be focused on aiding the body in healing itself.
Yes. And it's interesting. With Dr. and Mr. Joseph Perry, I really enjoy on Fridays some of the things that he adds is in regards to the healing of the physiology of the body through the alternative solutions. But I know for myself, having been through some health challenges, that the technology can help us physiologically to continue, even though you and I are being spiritual and understanding that no life continues, even if the body goes back until the dust. It's interesting to me as I go through my health challenges how I am still functioning on the physical. And this part of the eye surgery, it's very interesting because I really believe that if we were eating as we should, that our bodies could rejuvenate and heal. And remember that it can rejuvenate and regenerate, because there's a memory and people don't recognize it. We really are supposed to be able to regenerate our limbs. But so said, what is she talking about? We are supposed to be able to regenerate the cells, our intelligence. And if we were eating properly, our body could regenerate. The cells are constantly shedding and regenerating on a level that we don't understand. But even on a larger level, we're supposed to be able to re-heal limbs. I mean, we can get into that one day maybe, but that's a deeper conversation. I hope you agree with me, Sister Naima. You know, that's an even deeper conversation, but it's a help to know that there are people that go into the medical field that do learn some things that can help us and aid us on the physical level.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, the things that people watch Jesus do things and they thought, oh, it's a miracle. Well, anything that you don't understand the science behind is a miracle to you. I mean, you don't understand how it's done, but it doesn't mean that it's not doable, because he would always say this and greater things will you be able to do. So our job is to learn those higher spiritual sciences that will help us to do the kinds of healing that is possible. And when we get to that point of understanding, then what was done will no longer be a miracle, but it will be understanding that what you're doing is raising the vibration of a person so that they are able to heal themselves.
That's right. That vibration.
And love is an energy, and it creates a vibration, and it enables you to heal. That's why when you pray for someone, you're sending them love, and it's raising their vibration and enabling their body to heal itself. It's a spiritual science that Jesus was practicing. So when we learn this, and when we eliminate all negative emotions from our own heart and our own spirit, then we can emanate the kind of vibration that helps people to heal. And we've all said at some point, you know, somebody, hey, make me sick. It's literally true. You know, when people forgetting you all the time. They are literally making mistakes.
Well, they just did some research. I was listening to radio station. University of Chicago just did, somebody else, another top flight institution just did some more research. I just heard this about 3-4 weeks ago. University of Chicago did some more research and found that those who were going through healthcare challenges that prayed had a better healing response through the healthcare challenges they were having than those who did not pray. They actually did another study on this, and they constantly are, not just them, but they're constantly doing studies on this throughout the medical field at the universities. And they found again that those who prayed, and you and I would say have a spiritual attitude towards their health care, came out better and healed better than those who were not in prayer or conscious of their spirituality. That's a fact now. Mm. This is a fact. They keep doing it.
Yeah.
Every time I turn around, and they keep showing the same results. Prayer. And the other one, I think, is laughter.
Well, you know, that this is a reality, and that's why we have to keep emphasizing to people. It's not about your religion. It's about your connection to the creator of us all. It's the energy, the powerful love energy that emanates from that creative force that we're sharing with others. And so it doesn't matter what you call yourself. As a matter of fact, if you're arguing about it, then you're probably not even connected as much as you think you are, because you can't possibly be attacking someone and you have the love of God in you.
That's right.
You disagree with their concept of it. So
it's not hard. Unfortunately, I think people think of prayer as something hard. It is not hard.
I could do this.
It is a relaxation. Just like
you have to go to school and learn how to do.
You think about it, it's a softness. It's a belief in us. It's a thought. Just like you spoke, it's not hard. I mean, sometimes I think the interpretation through religion is that prayer is a hard thing. It's a soft belief in knowing that God can and will heal. I mean, the example in traditional religion is Jesus Christ. I mean, just simply believe that Jesus Christ for us is an example, and even for the Muslim faith, Jesus Christ is a part of the Muslim faith. He set an example in the human as to how we can follow Allah, God, Jehovah God also, the Father. You know, it's just right there in your face.
Well, you know, people get stuck on titles. They get stuck on which spiritual teacher they follow. They get stuck on things that don't matter. And then sometimes religion actually can separate you from God just because it makes you remain in a state of fear, like, oh, I'm going to be punished if I do something wrong. I'm going to be punished if I don't get the right religion. I'm going to be punished. And God is not a spirit of fear, because love is the opposite of fear. And so, and what does the scripture say? Love, perfect love casts out all fear. So if we know this, and we're taught this by the spiritual master that people say they follow. They say they follow Jesus and the things that he taught. Then why are we still arguing about these things? Why are we making it so hard to manifest the things that we were taught we are already created to manifest? Things like self-healing. Things like assistance in healing others with this same love energy that he used. And I think we make children fearful of God, as if, you know, God is this cruel, ruthless parent that punishes you for every mistake you make.
Mm-hmm.
And so children grow up with this concept of fear, and as a result, they don't grow spiritually as they could have if we had not injected our own misunderstandings into them.
Mm-hmm.
So the greatest thing we can do is liberate children from our own ignorance. And teach them how to be connected to the divine power within them, and once we do that, then we can help them and guide them on the right path. We can help them to grow. And this is why, you know, it's critical for parents to be able to demonstrate that for children. The only way children know what love looks like is to see it and to feel it in their lives. And so if you show it to them, then they can replicate it to other people. And, you know, this is why we talk about how you were raised. And every, you know, whenever a child does something crazy, people, how were you raised? Girl, how were you raised? Because, you know, that's what it is that shaped them. And, you know, we're looking at what it means to be a parent in the life of a child. That first thing that you do is you love them. You don't judge them. You don't beat them. You don't chastise them. You must first give them the foundation of love so that they know what that feels like. And that is their connection to God, the parents that love them. So, you know, we've been talking about what fathers do and the fact that it's more than just having a male figure in the house. That child needs that love energy from the male as well as the female. And that creates the balance. So sometimes, you know, when we don't have our biological fathers, we might have somebody else who fulfills that role in showing us the male energy of love so that we see the male counterpart to the female counterpart. And we have to be able to see love between mothers and fathers in order to really feel whole. Sometimes it is really painful for children when they watch parents who are angry and violent toward each other. It's very hurtful for a child because there's something in you that doesn't want to see that kind of hate and feel that kind of hate energy. It's devastating to a child because we come here already geared to receive love. That's part of our DNA, our makeup. You know, this is what we respond to. So, you know, we look for our parents to be able to demonstrate that for us, and it's very hurtful when you're in an environment where you don't see it. So, you know, we're asking fathers who have perhaps been that figure in someone else's child. Maybe you were the uncle that came by and took that son or daughter out to the ballpark, or maybe you were the one who went up to school to see about them if their grades weren't bad, or maybe you were the one who went to the school assembly to cheer them on if they performed. You know, I mean, the things that children need to reinforce their importance, to reinforce their significance. That's what fathers do. They say to the life of a child, "You mean something to me," because that's part of what keeps us feeling whole and healed, knowing that our lives matter. So if you have mattered in the life of a child, we want you to give us a call and talk about that, and talk about what motivated you to step up when you saw perhaps that wasn't being done. Maybe you had a neighbor's child or a nephew or a niece or somebody who, you know, you maybe were a scout leader or somebody who chose to be that figure in the life of a child, and you saw how you made a difference maybe to somebody who didn't have that male figure to reinforce for them that they mattered. You know, I always admire people who do things just out of the love of their heart. You know, they do kind things because they care. That always inspires me. You know, it's a quality. That's that God quality that we have. You know, when you just do things just because you recognize that other person is a human being like you. And, you know, it's What do they call that? Altruism, when you just do good deeds just because, you know, not expecting any recognition or monetary reward. You just do it just because of the love in your heart. So, you know, that's what we want to encourage people to do, because that's what will change the world, and that's what will change lives, and that's really what can turn a person's life around. You know, a lot of times a person will say, well, you know, this one person changed my life. They made a difference. I was headed down one way, and this person showed that they cared, and that just made me stop and think. So, you know, we are asking those who have perhaps been that person. They've perhaps been the one that stood up for a child in court, you know, when no one else showed up. Because, you know, those things matter. When a child does something, they go to court. The judge wants to see, well, is there anybody in the family that cares? Anybody that's going to stand up, speak up for them, be responsible for them? You know, those things matter even when it comes to how, if, you know, a young person does make a mistake, it affects how a judge may even consider, you know, whether or not to sentence them harshly. We're going to take a call at area code 630-926. And thank you for joining us on The Female Solution. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
Yes, a blessed morning. This is Naima. This is Lasay, and I'm very thankful to the reminder this morning and finally being able to connect again with the broadcast. And there's two things that I'd like to speak on. One, you're speaking in terms of the father that comes to assist in the family and show forth that very important attribute of his male watching and working with the family. And the other I wanted to share, and some understanding to the sister minister there in natural true healing from Almighty God. The first is I never actually had children directly, and about 7-8 years ago, about that time in my community where I'm at, with Imam Wadi Muhammad, they had a major function where they invited, when I was living in Brooklyn, him to come, and a very famous artist, I'm just name at the moment, African-American artist, sent out a request to the audience, especially to the brothers, that we take time with the youth and speak with the youth to help the youth. And I took that to heart. And it took me a few weeks to come to grips to how to address the youth in a manner to help them. And I began to really have some very, very serious concerns and inspiring them in the right direction with themselves, their accountability, first and foremost to Almighty God, and their responsibility to themselves to do right by themselves. And from that time forward, I've been in the struggle from time to time. I always try to stop whenever I can and share with the youth the best that I can and making them understand the very importance of keeping God first in their life and to really hold fast to the best that they understand in their belief of God and try hard to the best of their ability to be responsible for themselves and doing what is right, what is good, and to work hard in that, and that will give them much in the way of having a life that would be at peace and would be in accordance with the mercy and blessings of God. So I've, in that sense, I've in what fatherhood that I possibly can, I have worked in that capacity, and I'm very, very thankful, first and foremost, to Almighty God for that, for all mercies that he gives and the enabling to use the gifts that he's given self and continue to enhance life. The other thing in regards to the health of the sister, two things that I do know. One is we want to always keep Almighty God first and foremost as the healer and the doctor, and follow intuitively how he's showing you what you need to do. Follow that still voice, follow that Spirit of God. Stay obedient to how he's guiding you to heal you, even more so than whatever the medical field has to say. Always keep him as the number one authority in your healing, and letting him be the doctor, for be sure that he's the source of all goodness, without a shadow of a doubt. He's the provision giver. He's the source. And three things that I do know about helping you. I'm hearing you speaking, and as a doctor, I know you know much in that regard. Getting sleep is important. Drinking plenty of water is a healing in itself. Saying in our religion, being Muslim and Al-Islam, the Prophet has said, Almighty God has given the believer abundance of water to drink. And it's another saying, water over time will heal any illness. And God has spied some years ago that the fountain of youth, drink water. Well, and I thank God some years ago in New York City, I was able to bring the concept of water, which start being put in to the refrigerators where the sodas was, and developing that natural taste for water. And the other thing is, do some form of exercise every day. It's very, very important for the agility of the body, the liveliness of the cells, the mind and body connection, and feeling good with yourself. Do some form of exercise every day. If it's 5-10 minutes, working it up to 20 or 30 minutes, walking. Walking is one of the best exercise. Do exercise. It agilifies your body, and it makes you feel better and good about yourself, and knowing that it's like a life of youthfulness to your own mind. So I just wanted to share those two things, giving God the praise, and very thankful to you, Sister Naima, and how God has you mission on point and your partner there. And God continue to bless her and the wisdom, and how he has the two beautiful, powerful faiths working together in his absoluteness and enlightening the human beings to their better worship and living for God. Thank you so kindly.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you so much for calling in. Yes, absolutely. We appreciate those enlightening words of wisdom. And certainly for those listening, you see how simple it is to heal yourself. Just water, exercise, and yet, you know, if like you say, I like the way you say to use your instincts, because Almighty God gives us the answers within. And if you don't feel right about something that a doctor is telling you, or someone who's supposed to be a medical expert is telling you, if you in your instinct you don't feel right about it, then follow your own instinct, because sometimes they're just there to sell us drugs, to keep us paying money, when in fact, yes, and there are times when they will prescribe for you things that might treat the symptoms of your illness, but they don't allow your body to heal. You know, painkillers that numb the pain. Well, you know, your body's giving you pain for a reason, because your body's telling you that you need to correct an imbalance there. So if you numb the pain, then you're dismissing what your body is telling you. Your body's telling you fix this, and then you won't be hurting. So, and you're absolutely right about water. Very simple thing. God gives us water. Our bodies are, what is it, 87% water? I mean, we are, our bodies are made up of water, and if we keep giving our bodies clean water to wash away whatever impurities are there, we can heal whatever damage has been caused or whatever malfunction is causing. But we got to do those two things, you know. Move your limbs every day some kind of way, whether it's just, even just walking up a flight of stairs. Do that. Give your body what it needs. So I thank you, my brother. Words of wisdom, so profound, so simple, yet so profound.
Yes.
God have continue to bless and protect you and your good friend there, Sister Menace.
Yes,
yes,
well,
thank you.
Yes. Well, you're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, along with Minister Cynthia Marie Williams. And we have an opportunity to share wisdom today. So we want you to give us a call, 347-539-5639. We just finished celebrating Father's Day, and so many families enjoy the presence of the men in their lives, but not all the time. It's the biological father of the child that has been the influence in a child's life. If you have been the father figure for a child that's not your own, give us a call, 347-539-5639. That's 347-539-5639. And share your experience. Perhaps you've helped to guide someone who may have been going through that pubescent stage of rebellion, and maybe you stepped in and helped the mother deal with that young man who was trying to find himself and trying to define himself as a man. And maybe you were that person that helped guide him on the straight path, the right way. You helped him in his emergence toward manhood. Maybe you were the person who stepped in and helped that young daughter to understand her worth as a young woman so that she was perhaps not projecting the wrong image of womanhood, because perhaps you were the father figure that helped her with her self-esteem so that she could be the kind of young woman that God is molding her to be. So if you've been that man in someone else's life, you've been that father figure that the child needed so that they would see the balance between the male and female, give us a call, 347-539-5639, and tell us your story. And you know, a lot of times organizations provide that means. You know, might have been a scout leader, might have been a coach of a team. You might have been that person in their house of worship, maybe their organization where they attend every Friday, every Sunday, every Saturday. And maybe you were that teacher that they confided in when they couldn't talk to anybody else. But you made a difference. And they needed to see that there are men who are upstanding and who are valuable because they share wisdom and they show strength. We need that. Little girls need it just like little boys need it. And so if you've been that person in the life of someone who may not have been your biological child, but nevertheless they responded to you as a child responds to a father, and you could see that you made a difference in their lives, give us a call, 347-539-5639. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take some more calls, and we want to hear from you. If there was a man in your life that was the father figure for you that may not have been your biological father, but yet they made a difference, give us a call, 347-539-5639. Going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a moment.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference too. Be inspired. Watch the Media Connection.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
We're back. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, along with Minister Cynthia Marie Williams. And we want to hear from you. We've just finished our recognition of fathers during this Father's Day weekend. And we know there are many men out there who go above and beyond just their own families and sometimes have an impact on the lives of many other children who may not have access to their biological fathers, and yet they still need that male role model in their lives. So if you have been one of those men, or if you've been influenced by a man who perhaps was not your biological father, but nevertheless made a difference in your life, give us a call, 347-539-5639. That's 347-539-5639. Those holding on, press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. Oh, brother, let's say you do something that's very inspirational, and you have taken upon yourself to send out inspirational messages each day. And you never know when you might say something that strikes the mind of a person. They may have been about to do something incorrect, and then they receive, you know, text message that's a reminder, you know, of what God says and what we're instructed to do in the constructing of our daily lives. What motivates you to do this consistently the way you do?
By the grace, I'm sorry, sister, name. I was trying to make sure that I, no noise, background, mute out, but I will respond to that by the grace of the Lord. I just wanted to be clear. When you are coming off after speaking, you should just star 1.
Yes.
You
don't have to hit a star. Just 1. Yeah, you don't. Yeah, just hit the 1. You don't have to hit a star. Just 1. Yeah.
Oh, I see. All right.
Yeah.
In regard to what you're, yes, ma'am. Thank you so kindly. In regard to what you're saying here, with the text messaging of the religious inspiration that I received over the years. At one time, I oversaw a religious organization when I had an improper perception of myself and my servitude to God, and thinking more and as though I was that figure. And I'm just extremely thankful to Almighty God to be very clear to recognize that He's the Creator and I'm creation, and my best position as a human being is a servant of God. And I'm so glad to be on that page, clear in my mind, and ever working to be more upright in that manner. In regards to the inspiration, I try to stay, I'm thankful, I keep myself in somewhat of a sheltered position from the world, though participating to the best of my ability to correct things. I'm not too much into at all the TV, radio, but more into my scripture and the wisdom of my beloved leader, and constantly in some form of prayer, and ever want to keep myself in line with my true self, my righteous self. And God inspires me over the wisdom that I've studied over years, books, scriptures, books on God, the knowledge of truth, and much of the world I have studied. He inspires me with precision that I believe would be a clear understanding at the present moment to better bring up the mind to seeing how to walk forward in a world of confusion, in the sense that people set to take the energy and strength of the human being, distract them from their consciousness and their ability to think and adhere to the fear of God and worship, which they're naturally inclined and born to do. So the schemes of the devil, which are weak, is what I fight hard against, and the goodness that God is and only good, and the way of life that would be peace and blessings with Him, ways of understanding and knowledge having to do with our great life that God gives us, living in a type of heaven when we're steadfast in our obedience with Him. As the inspiration comes up, at one time I used to give out little pamphlets and print them, and I still do that, but I found that the text messaging with certain companies, they allow the minutes and text messaging. I have quite a number of good friends and ministers and government officials. So when the inspiration comes, having to do with the obedience to Almighty God and fighting the schemes of the devil, precisions in that understanding, I type it out in the most clear manner in which I can, that and I believe that the heart and mind will comprehend easily. And I text it out to those 80, I've had as many as 240 people, good friends and religious people, leaders in religion and government officials, all the way to the White House. I send those messages, and they sometimes they come in 4 or 5 times a day, and I have to come to Chris and say, whoa, don't want to over-bombard. I have to hold to tomorrow for this one right here. Just back up a little bit. That's what I try to do, to ever keep the human being conscious of their duty to God and self and being at peace and being very aware to not get caught in the calling, attracting, schemes attracting the mind to be other than their conscious self and their obedient self to God. So that's the basis of the text messaging that is righteous and spiritual and having to do with the good life here on earth.
Wonderful. And really, we all just need a reminder, because we are made to be good. Nobody's born evil. We're in a society that can certainly steer us the wrong way, but we just need a reminder that we are, in fact, the manifestation of the Spirit of God. And if we look at each other as that way, then that will define the way we treat each other. You know, it's such an amazing thing. Just changing thought changes reality. If you change the way you think about somebody, then that governs the way you treat them. So if you look at each individual as a reflection of yourself, which, of course, is a reflection of God, then even the way you correct someone is influenced by that. And I'm working on now a new book, Spare the Rod, Love the Child, to help parents learn how to correct us the way God corrects us. Because
what was the title again, Naima?
Spare the Rod, Love the Child. You know, people often
point
Spare the Rod, Love the Child. And, of course, it kind of take off from the people
the
often
rod,
quote the biblical verse, Spare the Rod, Spoil the Child, meaning, you know, you should. And they interpret that verse that is often quoted from the Bible as meaning that you should beat your children so that they can be better, you know. But, in fact, I think there's a misunderstanding about raising children, because if you're beating a child, you're certainly not giving them understanding or love. You're giving them fear. And fear without understanding does not produce correct behavior. It produces lack of trust. It produces dishonesty. And in the long run, it blocks the child from growing, because they cannot really receive love as long as they're in a state of fear. And so a child's got to trust you as a parent enough to come to you when they have made a mistake, just like we come to God in prayer. You know, I've made a mistake. Help me to correct myself. That's got to be what a child trusts a parent to do in order to get that kind of guidance. So if you instill fear in a child by punishing them for every mistake they make, then they learn not to trust you. Therefore, they will not seek guidance from you. Therefore, they make even more mistakes. So we as parents have got to correct the way we raise our children, and we have to use the same method of correction that God uses, which is love. Love and teaching. If you've made a mistake, I'm going to show you the consequences of your mistake, and you're going to experience the pain you caused yourself by your mistake, then I'm going to show you the right way to do things so that you don't experience this pain. So when we learn how to be parents in the way God is to us, then we can raise better children who are filled with love instead of fear, and children who do right instead of wrong, and children who know that the Spirit of God is in them, as opposed to them thinking, you know, prayer is something hard to do, and God is so far away that he's not going to talk to me because I'm not good enough. You know, all these wrong conceptions that we have. So, I appreciate what you do in sending out wisdom.
It is very important for the child to understand there are consequences of their action in terms of
Definitely.
Disciplining their own self and a surety to know that their power of God is right there in a loving way, and that they must rely on Him. Putting God first in the child's life is the ultimate, most important thing, and making them to understand to be responsible, be more conscious of their thoughts and actions. I just learned to clear today. Someone had read over some early teachings of my beloved leader in describing the fear of God and the fear of coming out of the true nature that He created us in, the righteous nature, as we say, the fitra, how we were created to worship Him, the fear of coming out of that nature. I knew that God was showing me to fear Him, not fear the warfare I was going through and correcting myself and not at all giving into negativity that I was no part of. And He had showed me that I must fear Him, and I was so thankful to get a better clarity of fearing to come out of my true self, my righteous self, and that brought a lot of clarity to my mind, and a clarity in raising the children to know their true self is a self, just like everything praises God, creation, and the trees, and the birds in the morning. Yeah, everything had its own mode of prayer. We naturally have a nature to worship God and to be conscious that I be aware not to come out of that and to fear coming out of that. That's where I would bring stepping into the area of wrong, the quarto, the repercussion, that which comes with the wrong. Know of a surety, the good comes from God. It's one of the greatest clarities of law I had learned when I went to New York then and stayed for about 11 months doing work in the way of righteousness. All the good comes from God. Any bad is from myself, attained from my own self that I have to work to purify. I can blame no one when it comes to what is transpiring in my life. God is only good. I create from coming out of my natural good self something other than so. And He also showed me always ask for forgiveness and ask for guidance, because I don't know where I may be making error at, and of a surety, if He's asked me that, I don't know the full reality of what He said, because God is infinite in His wisdom. With the clarity, I do know I am to ask for forgiveness, because I know if I do wrong, that's the first thing I want to do is cover, like my leader has said, the perfect person is not the one that doesn't make mistakes, but when they make mistakes, they go to God in repentance. So I go and I ask for forgiveness when I'm conscious, but even when I'm not conscious, I'm doing it because He said ask it, I'm going to ask for forgiveness, because there may be things where I'm neglecting or what should be doing and not conscious that I should be doing. So I ask for forgiveness because He inspired me to do it, and I ask for guidance. So these are points of in raising with that love that the child wants to, you want the child to understand their responsibility along with their reverence. The fear in a true sense that the Creator is there. This is just a trial period in life, and we have to give an account on the day of judgment and to be conscious of that reality, and that's for sure. The enemy doesn't want you to be conscious of that, and that's part of his schemes of these attractions that are not good for us in the world. And to be conscious of that, that's why it's important that we, especially the brothers, have a community that is of our own, that is built in righteousness, and that we're taking care of our own, and we can live comfortably in that manner. So it's being worked on, and we will get there, and brothers are very responsible for that, and the consciousness is being lifted in that regard of the awakened, enlightened brothers, that this is our duty, and we have to get more overly busy in being accountable to our families and our community.
Yeah, you know, that is so true what you say about being in a community. men need to have reinforcement from other righteous men. That makes all the difference in the world. If the men that are around you are constantly reinforcing the right behavior, the right thoughts, the right attitudes, then that's going to influence every man to maintain that high standard. By the same token, if you're around men and their thinking is low, they're into self destructive behaviors, getting drunk, intoxicated, drug-induced, violent behavior, lack of self-control, arguing, those things, being in that atmosphere will affect your spirit so that you lose, as you say, the natural goodness that God puts in you. So as we're taught, keep in the company of the righteous. That's what you do. Whoever you're around, that's who's going to influence your behavior. They're literally influencing your vibration so that you're going to either go higher or lower based on your surroundings. So if you want to be a good man, then you have to be in the presence of good men. And if you don't care, then you're going to be around people who do self-destructive things, and you're going to be more susceptible to that voice that's steering you in the wrong way and in the way that caused you to hurt yourself. And like you say, there are consequences to wrong behavior. There are consequences to bad decisions, and you feel the effects of bad decisions. So, and that's our job as parents, to teach that principle to children early, that there are consequences to wrong decisions. There are consequences to doing things that hurt yourself and others. And so you have to take responsibility for what you do. And like
right
you said, seek forgiveness, seek guidance. Right. It starts with the thoughts. It starts with the thoughts. And you know, just like if you really love somebody, you want them to be pleased with you, you want them to be happy with what you've done, and you're gonna fear losing their good feelings about you. And that's the kind of fear, when we speak of fear of God, you don't want your Creator to see you as someone who is less than what you are. So you don't want to do things that would harm the creation, you know, harm other people, harm other beings, because then you become a lesser person. So that's what motivates us to strive to be our best. We want to be pleasing to God, the Creator that's given us the capacity to do right and the capacity to do good. And then if we see we fall short, we want to ask for help and pray that, you know, that our mistakes may be forgiven so that we can even correct whatever harm we've done. But it's that spirit that the parent has to instill in the child, that consciousness. You have to have a conscience of how you're treating people and what you're doing is affecting
conscience.
Yes. So that's our job as parents, is to instill that so that we're self-correcting. Just like the body is made to be self-healing, we're made to be self-correcting. To instantly, you know, just like on a computer, you type a computer screen, you have the self-correction feature on it. As soon as you type a wrong word, it'll put a little red line under it, and you have to go back and look at the word and see if you spelt it wrong. That's how we are in spirit. As soon as you say something or do something wrong, there's instant, your conscience is that self-correcting feature which tells you, oh, no, that's a mistake. You got to fix that. And so it's our job to keep that apparatus in working condition so that it instantly it kicks in. As soon as the wrong thought comes in your mind, you instantly stop yourself and fix it. So God made us to be this way because our mold, our design is that of perfection. And so we're made to constantly fix whatever is in error. And that's the feature that a parent must highlight in their raising of a child, that self-correcting feature, so that you know when you're thinking wrong things. You're thinking about ditching school. That conscience should say, no, that's wrong. You know when you've said a vulgar word that shouldn't have come out of your mouth. Your conscience should say, no, that's wrong. You know if you're about to pick up something, somebody, you know, left a wallet on a table and walked away and they forgot, and you know that it's not yours, your conscience should tell you, no, don't pick it up or give it back, you know. So this is what we, if every human being had the self-correcting feature working properly in them, that's when we would have peace. We wouldn't have to worry about other people's behavior because they're self-correcting. And that's what we have to instill in our children, that feature that God has made us all to have, the ability to correct the wrong. And if we make a judgment in error, to ask God for guidance so that we can fix the error in our judgment. Because, you know, we're not all seeing, all knowing. We don't know everything. We make mistakes. But to desire to do right is what has to be inside of us. That's the job of a parent, to put that in the child so the child is constantly self-correcting, so they're not doing hurtful things to other people or themselves. It's truly amazing. Well, of course, those holding on, press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. You're listening to The Female Solution. I'm your host, Naima Latif, along with Minister Cynthia Marie Williams. And we, of course, want to hear from you. If you have been the father figure in the life of a child that perhaps is not your biological child, but you realize that your presence in their life did make a difference because perhaps you were able to share that wisdom. You were able to demonstrate that loving spirit that they needed to see coming from a male figure so they could know what it looks like. You know, little girls need to see it just like little boys need to see it. We have to know how to manifest something, and we can only imitate that which we have seen. So if you have been that person that helped to show a child what love looks like, and you know that you have helped them, maybe even helped correct behavior that was about to go astray, give us a call. Or if you have had the experience of someone in your life, may not have been your biological father, but in fact they were the male figure in your life that made a difference, we want you to give us a call, 347-539-5639. You know, we always talk about women being nurturing, but men have a way that they nurture just as well. They share knowledge. They remind us of our responsibilities. Rather, as you have said, people have to be responsible for their behavior. And maybe, you know, the father figure, he might be a little more stern in his method. That gives balance to perhaps the woman. Maybe she might be a little softer, a little kind of. You've got to have that other side, the stern side, that the no-nonsense side that expects you to take responsibility and fix something that you've messed up, you know. So you got to have those two sides in order to have a balance. Just as God is both merciful and forgiving, God also allows us to experience consequences for our behavior so that we can know we have to fix things. So there's, and both sides are love. Because if I love you, I want you to feel pain when you have done something wrong so that you know to fix it. Just like your body makes you feel pain when something's wrong on the inside that needs to be healed. So it's merciful that you feel the pain that enables you to correct what is malfunctioning. That's why painkillers are not necessarily good things to take when there is something that's wrong inside your body that needs to be healed and not just covered over so that you don't think about it. Because then whatever's wrong will just get worse while you're giving yourself artificial painkillers. So the pain is a good thing because it's focusing the attention on the thing that's malfunctioning within your body that needs to be corrected and fixed so that you are whole and healed. Wouldn't you say so, Minister Cynthia? Certainly it is, there is always a direct correlation between the physical and the spiritual. And that was one of the ways Jesus helped people to understand spiritual principles. He would give them a physical example so they could comprehend that there is the correlation between the physical world and the spirit world. We're first spirit inside a physical body, but we're having a spiritual experience in this physical world. So what we do is a manifestation of what's on inside, in the inside of us, in terms of our spirit, our spiritual growth. So, you know, we need each other to help each other to learn, and we need each other to help reflect what's right. And parents are needed in the lives of children, because our job is to pass on the wisdom so that each generation isn't making the same mistakes. It's supposed to get better over time. So, of course, if you have been the father figure in the life of a child and giving that masculine love that they need, and you can see that perhaps your presence made a difference, share your story with us. 347-539-5639. That's 347-539-5639. Again, press 1 when you're ready to join our conversation. You're listening to The Female Solution, and we're coming up on our second hour. I'm going to take a quick break. Well, let me take a call, and then we'll go to a quick break. Our dear friend at 312-671, yes, tell the audience your name, where you're calling from, and give us your wisdom for the day.
We are in Yashalom, Ahura, as they say. We don't die, we multiply. Like power, our brother, Yashalom Laker, brother Minister Plump, Brother Floyd Plump. I just want to say, not just in my behalf, but my experience is that, you know, a father is necessary in every family's behalf, because it creates and maintains balance in life, you know, with the man, either direct or indirect, in the family structure, is the image of God, in the sense of being a guide, or being a protector, and being a strong person that every boy as well as every girl would need. So it's a way of life. I know the light of my life was not only my father and mother, however, my grandfather and my grandmother was the super delight in my life, because they made the difference. I was, at one period of time, was without my mother present, and because of that, I think I had the wrong attitude. Matter of fact, I know I had the wrong attitude. And if you're missing either a father or a mother in your life, then you're missing, as they say, the spice of life. You're missing some direction, some guidance that no other person could actually give you, especially if the biological father is not there. And so as a result, kind of make a little long story short, when I was going astray, my mother wasn't there, and my father, he wasn't there, but my grandmother and my grandfather sent for us. Matter of fact, they came and got us, my grandmother, and took us back down south from Chicago, Illinois, to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And that was the turning point and the change of my whole life for the rest of my life. And I'm so glad that, you know, I had a grandfather in my life. I could never keep up with my grandfather. He was always ahead of me in mind and spirit and body, and he really couldn't read or write. Now, my grandmother, she could read pretty good and kind of astute-like, but my grandfather, he couldn't read or write, but he was known as Deacon John Plump Sr., and I really like to say happy belated Father's Day to all of the fathers, and that way, and I had him to mend some things in my life, even between my father and I, because my father wasn't there, and I felt like he should have been, and he could have been. However, it was like he when I say a man who made the difference in not making a correction and adopting all of us, my brothers and my sisters, which was one other brother and two sisters. And this five of us all together, and yet they adopted four of us and took on the responsibility of parents. And they wound up being together 50-plus years as
wow.
a husband and wife. And he was, you know, not only Deacon John Plum Sr., but he was the senior deacon of the church. And also he was a man of integrity where everybody had some respect for him. I mean, he didn't play. He was Grandfather Plump or Big Daddy Plump that didn't play with nobody, you know, in the family. And, he was the strong man of my immediate family in my life that made the difference and brought me in the light of his understanding in Jesus Christ, the Lord of the worlds. And yet, one of the most important our service with our church relationship was that all of the disciples and Jesus was a black man. Isn't that fantastic? And they knew that back in the 30s and 40s and 50s.
Oh,
and they were teaching it to us. So, you know, all my life, you know, I'm glad that I had that man in my life because you only can truly learn how to be a man from a man or from other men, and the men that was around him was truly men of God, and it made the difference in my life that I can serve God and I can serve the family and I can serve the people right down to the modern time. And, you know, I've also had some teachings, you know, outside the family. That was the bloodline. But then characters like the Honorable Mayor Harold Washington and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, even before him, you know, was always a men of image that had a family image and a strong image in my mind. And as a result, I think it really truly made a difference. And I'm glad that I'm not only a father, but a grandfather and a godfather and a caretaker for Chicago, in the sense of as well as America and the world, to help boys to make the transition to men.
Yeah, that's a critical thing, you know, because there's a point where, and I know there are a lot of women who have been successful in raising sons, but there is a point in a young man's life where he needs to see what it looks like to be a man, and a woman can't show him that. She can't give him that image of what he is growing into. He needs to see that, because if he doesn't see the right image, he's going to see the wrong image, and he'll follow that. So if the only image of a man he has is a lawless man, a spiritually unconscious man, a cruel man, an absent man, I mean, if that's the only image he has, then that's all he can strive to imitate. So you're right. You have to see it to be it. And for young women, knowing what a good man looks like, she needs to see it. Otherwise, she's going to follow after the wrong kind of man and end up in the wrong situation with an absent father for her child. So, you know, it's wonderful that your grandfather stepped in and gave you that image of what to become, because you need to see that. And, you know, that's why uncles, grandparents, neighbors, I mean, we've got to be those people in the lives of children, because sometimes the biological parents may be going through personal struggles and they can't for whatever reason. They're still going through something within themselves that they need to try to correct. And they can't be the people we need them to be. But somebody's got to be that person in our lives. Somebody's got to show us
that's
that right image. And that's what we're all here for. You know, like we say, each one teach one. You know, I mean, we all have to have an influence. We have to choose to have a positive influence in the lives of others. That's how we change the world. You know, each soul at a time. And the people that are surrounding us, we're influencing them with our thoughts, with our speech, with our behavior. We are influencing everybody whose life we touch. So we've got to think, how am I influencing the children in my family that are watching me? And they may not be my own children, but they are, in fact, in my family. They are being influenced by what I do. And like Brother Lissay was saying earlier, we've got to take responsibility for our behavior. You know, we can't blame people or make excuses. We have to take responsibility for the decisions that we have made that are affecting the lives of people around us. And that's the way we change the world, is to correct ourselves. I'm going to take a few more callers here. We've got area code, and thank you so much, brother. I knew you had some wisdom, because you always do. Thank you so much for sharing
Praise
that.
God.
And we're going to take a caller at area code 773-522. Thank you so much for joining us on The Female Solution. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment. That's 773-522. You with us?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
My name is Rashida.
Ah.
And I'm Rashida. I believe from Chicago.
Yes,
I would like to make a brief comment on that. Coming from a family of almost no men, and having a father who made a career and died active duty in military, it was sort of hard for the men in our family, you know, to look up to the other men, the young men, because there were no men in the family, only women. And so when I became a teenager, I looked up to the leadership, such as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and we had a Muslim girls training program where we were taught certain principles and ethics. We would have once a week meeting, and in addition to prayer services and other spiritual activities. So I'm only saying that to say that was my extended family. And when I had my son, he learned certain behaviors in that arena from the school under the teachings of the leadership of Minister Farrakhan and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. However, there's a lot of other youth that's in our community who have different, you know, unfortunate experiences, and they don't have that type of, you know, training available. And so with the way the society is going now, I saw yesterday on CNN, they're bringing children in the homes and raising the children, and the man and the female role is there, but the man and the female doesn't have any relationship, and the male lives outside of the home. So I'm saying that's sort of crazy, but that's the way the society is going. So we have to go back to the old values, because culturally, African Americans, it's been a fact, had been known not to have too many men. It's good to have them, you know, as role models and for other necessities. But we have to be, you know, actually real about it. Then we have all these other hidden things that cause a negative as far as the upbringing of the children. So what I'm trying to say is that we who know that what the needs are, be it female or male, should, you know, sort of have an input, and if is the nurturing should be from a man, then we need to refer and help to nurture that youth into that, you know, type of settings, because society is dictating something entirely different about parenting and about the values. Because I was really stunned yesterday watching the CNN, and they're advocating no relationship, and man stay in the house, in another house, a woman stay in the other house, and the vulnerable children who that happened to be homeless have to stay into the house with them while they are mimicking what adulthood and the male and female responsibilities are to their offspring. Then I saw something of other things that was devastating about the male role. However, there was one motivation there, and it was a guy, NBA player, who had been homeless since he was 11 years old. And he had a son that at 14, and he was telling about the experience and stimulating things for role models. Those are the type of images that we have to, you know, train and speak to do outreach to these people, because society is really messed up, and that's basically all I had to say about that.
That's really amazing. I'm thinking about the fact that the family structure is evolving in a way that is not positive. Like you point out, it's becoming more of the norm for mothers and fathers to live in a separate house because for whatever reason they did not stay together. So the children are sometimes bouncing back and forth from the mother's house to the father's house. There might be different methods of discipline in each household. One might be more strict than the other. One might be lenient. One might be more observant than the other. Another might be absent sometimes. So, you know, the child learns, well, you know, if I go to my mother's house because she's gone all the time, you know, I can have my friends over. We have our little parties and do wrong things. Or maybe when I go to my father's house, well, he's got his friends over getting drunk, so, you know, we can kind of steal the liquor. And, you know, I mean, just different things that happen because the parents are not working together, and children are able to take advantage of the brokenness and not really adhere to any rules of conduct. So that, you're right, that is a very alarming trend that we're seeing happening, because a marriage is a partnership, you know, just like a business partnership. Each partner has a role. Each partner has their strengths that they bring. Each partner has their responsibilities. And together, you make up the whole. And so with that one unit, you provide security for the child and direct guidance. But when that unit is broken, then both halves are weakened. And as a result, they don't have the impact in providing right guidance to a child. And you're right. You're seeing a whole lot of dysfunction as a result of us not having unified households. And, you know, kids fall through the cracks because, you know, they do things and it's not clear, where were you? Were you at your mother's house? Were you at your father's house? Where should you have been? And then when kids turn up missing, sometimes police are slow to respond because it was unclear as to where they should have been. So, okay, you say your child's missing, they didn't come home. Well, do they live with you all the time? Well, no, sometimes they go to their father's house. Okay, well, let's wait and see if they show up there. So, you know, you lose 2-3 days because it's unclear as to where the child should have been because they didn't have a permanent home. They were kind of shoveled between two homes and then sometimes just hanging out with friends. So, you know, we've got missing children that are gone for a good 48 hours because they didn't have a specific home they should have been in. And as a result, within that 48-hour period, they tell you if a child is missing and they don't find them within that 48-hour period, it gets less and less likely they're going to be found alive. So this brokenness of our homes, it has such a detrimental effect on the safety of our children. We got to figure out how to bring that back together. You're absolutely right. That is becoming an accepted trend, and we're no longer expecting mothers and fathers to be living together. I mean, I've seen at schools, you know, they'll take they in the records of a child, they'll ask them, you know, where they live and you know, are they living with their mother or their father, and we're used to broken families, two homes and two residences, and you know, which one is your primary residence? I mean, you know, questions that didn't even come up before, now that just becomes a part of what we expect. And we got to figure out how to change that trend because it's definitely not helpful in the raising of a child, especially if we want that child to have some specific principles that they're following that both parents are reinforcing. So, well, we certainly, as always, thank you for your input. And we're going to go to caller at area code 773-727. Thank you for joining us on The Female Solution. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
Hi, this is Susanna Sandoval. I was just listening to the sister who just shared her background, you know, yeah, some commentary. You know, I raised three in a blended family. We raised children from other mothers, you know, and you try really hard to coordinate with the other parents in order to create some kind of semblance of a normal family. But I think today's normal is actually more abnormal than it used to be. It's definitely not a two-parent household. I mean, I think you're challenged by trying to maintain that traditional model, but you do your best to try to create a sense of family with your immediate family, your extended family, aunts and uncles, you know, other folks that are helping you caretaking with the children. But I thought it was interesting what you were commenting about the you know, children spending a lot of time outside of the home, you know, basically, you know, with family, with other families and with other friends. And I think I think you're right. I think children really do, you know, they do find themselves negotiating a lot more earlier in life about certain permissions, you know, how long you stay over somebody's house versus, you know, trying to manage quality time with the parent, especially if both parents are continuously working, you know, to upkeep a certain lifestyle. So, I mean, I think, you know, we really do need to, you know, a lot of parents rely on support groups. I know there's quite a few single women's, you know, single parents groups out there. I mean, it's not just women. I mean, I have a couple of friends that parent very diligently. They're single fathers. There's one that has three boys. There's another that has, you know, two boys. They work complete full-time, almost overtime jobs, you know, to keep a certain lifestyle. One has a nanny. The other one has a housekeeper, you know, just to maintain, you know, certain normalities for their children. But when you ask them at the end of the day, you know, do they feel like they're giving quality of time to their children, they feel challenged. They don't feel like they're doing enough as a parent. And I think it's something, I know that during the Bush administration, they had this whole healthy family, you know, healthy marriage initiative, you know, and there was a lot of critique about that. But, you know, I think that there's some kind of happy medium, you know, where you can have support groups or challenge folks to, you know, to really consider, you know, what the commitment means when you do decide to get married or you do decide to become a parent. And oftentimes that coincides with each other and sometimes it doesn't. So, you know, those societal issues, you know, arise when you have people who are making decisions. And, you know, oftentimes there are, you know, again, it's on an individual basis, you know, not necessarily in a dual format, you know, where the two parents are on the same page.
Well, one of the things that I guess becomes disturbing is the fact that we're not acknowledging that there are two different roles. You know, you got to have the person who is able to be there in the home, particularly when children are going through their formative years, and it costs to live, so you've got to have somebody that's out earning a living. And, you know, sometimes women take it as an attack on their right to work or right to earn a living when someone speaks about the traditional family, the father going out to work and the mother staying home. And yet, if you've got a household where both people are always gone, who's raising the children? And it makes it difficult, you know, when everybody's got to get out there and hustle and earn the money, and then the children are, you know, you got the latchkey children that are coming into an empty home, unsupervised. It's very expensive to hire a housekeeper or a babysitter. So many times, like you say, early on, you know, children are they're left alone. and they shouldn't be. And so we have to figure out ways to cooperate as parents so that someone performs that job of being in the house with the small child, teaching them things. And I've seen the difference, you know, when parents are both working and no one is there in their earlier years, or maybe they're, shifting from different people. Family members may babysit every now and then. But if you got, a 3 or 4 year old about to enter school and they don't have a consistent caretaker in the house, these are the years they're supposed to be learning some very basics that are going to help them when they go to kindergarten. Like, what is your name? they need to know these.
Or,
things.
Yeah, and you know that you're right. I spent a lot of time working with the Head Start Association, both at the city, state, regional, and national levels. And there are studies like between the ages of 0 and 8 are when children's identity are formalized. After 8, you can pretty much, it's done. I mean, those first 8 years, the first 3 years are even crucial. And that maternal child, the mother-child bond is so crucial. And oftentimes because our society is challenged, with this whole, right to work, whose right is it to work? We don't, does the father get paternal leave, when the child is born, or is it basically expected that the mother's going to take off too? I mean, there are countries where they're actually, the father does get paternal leave and that it's negotiated. I mean, there are countries like France.
There's a couple companies here to do it, yes.
I mean, we're in France, the mother is given, X amount of paid time off by the government in order to focus.
Some countries up to 2 years they get paid leave. Yeah.
I mean, that's crucial because if you're truly concerned, I mean, those are questions that we need to ask ourselves, as we talk about, changing the workplace, right? I mean, just consider even these teachers that were just downsized in Chicago. There were 800 and something teachers downsized this past Friday, right? Their lives, and it's not just the impact of them, that drastic transition on them, but the lives of their families and of their children, whereas that parent was used to going to work, and now that parent is going to be home at least temporarily until they find another income-deriving activity. But those changes are, have impact. And I think when you talk about, I've spent some time in workforce development and even the studies in childhood development, it's like those are, when a major life transition happens, like where you're laid off or you lose a job or a parent dies or somebody, there's some major event happening, that affects the family. And I think, we really, as a society, we really need to ask ourselves, is this the kind of society that we're trying to raise? Is this quality care when the parents are running around like hamsters on a wheel, both sometimes, and you're trying to find some kind of semblance of, quote unquote, what the traditional family is like. Traditional family these days are single parents.
Yes, that's becoming the tradition, which is very scary because, again, parenthood is a partnership, and both partners perform a crucial role. So, like you mentioned, some of your male friends that are single fathers, it's impossible to work a job, two jobs, and then come home and try to be the father that's supervising homework, and you can't do it. You're exhausted. So then we end up feeling guilty because you can't be the super person trying to be the nurturer and the teacher at home and earn a living and work two jobs so you can bring enough income. It doesn't work. It doesn't work, and people do the best they can, but then let your child make a mistake and do something wrong, get suspended from school, and then everybody's down on you. Oh, what kind of parent are you? I mean, that whole Trayvon Martin thing, they brought out the fact that a lot of it had to do with he was suspended from school. I mean, classic case we're talking about here, parents living in two different homes. And, of course, probably each parent may have their own relationship in addition to being co-parenting of this child. But for whatever reason, he was sent to stay with his father during the time he was suspended from school. And then this tragic thing happened where some guy decides, oh, this is some kid walking the block. Well, let me pull out a gun and shoot him. You know, these are the things that happen when our children are going from one house to another and having to go in unfamiliar territory so that neighbors don't know who they are. And as a result, they're misidentified as perhaps, you know, a burglar or whatever. I mean, that's George Zimmerman's excuse. You know, well, you know, I was with a neighborhood watch, and you know, I thought he might have been a prowler. Yeah, okay, yeah, sure. But that's part of what happens when you are living in two different homes or shuffling back and forth between mother and father, and so the neighborhood that should be your neighborhood, where your neighbors should know you and you should feel comfortable. Instead, you're treated like a stranger because you don't live there all the time. And that is one of the tragedies that happen when we live in what has become the tradition of two household families as opposed to mother and father living in the same house. So, you know, you're absolutely right that this has now become the norm, and as a result, our children are endangered because they're not growing up in places where the neighbors know them. You know, you can walk down the street and feel safe because everybody on the block knows you. I mean, that's the kind of neighborhood I grew up in. Everybody on this block knew me and knew my sisters and knew our family. So I had eyes watching me all the time. I never felt unsafe.
That's true. I mean, I used to have a 3-block walk, and, you know, you had checkpoints. The people knew when you were going to get out of school, and they knew it was either a grandfather or somebody's grandmother or their aunt or their uncle or the neighbor that was looking out to make sure. And then they watched you. And they also, there was a certain level of security, a certain level of protection. You know, neighbors don't even know neighbors in the same building anymore. You know, they barely even spell.
Right.
So it's like more people move around, you know, they get, you know, move, you know. I'm from South Chicago, and there was a trend where the folks from Cabrini Green were moved, you know, they were moved out of their home, you know, to other areas of the city, and that's one of the areas of the city that they were moved to. And it's like these kids, how well were they transitioned? You know, how well, you know, what, you can't abruptly move, I mean, you can, obviously, you can abruptly move masses of people, but
disruptive to their schooling, is disruptive to their social adjustment, you know, all these fights. I mean, they talked about the fight where the child was killed at Finger High School. That was the result of shoving two groups of people together, two neighborhoods together, trying to close one school down, and you had the kids from Cabrini, well, not Cabrini, from Alt Gill Gardens coming to a Finger High School. Conflicts, you know, they say gang rivalries, whatever the underlying conflict was, but the result was a child died.
Right, exactly. And how do we go about negotiating that for ourselves? Because when one child is left behind, we're left behind. If these are our future leaders that are going to be taking care of us, and these kids are unhealthy, have lack of health care, you know, lack of education, there's all these lacks. You know, it's like, how are we going to piece together a plan for our community? You know, it's like people, we're constructing so many buildings in the city, but how much thought is being done at the structure of our communities?
Right.
I mean, we,
how you feel a human being.
There's
so many
social service agencies that exist because there's such a high need. I mean, and how do we consolidate what people are doing in their own silos so that we can do it more effectively?
Right. Yeah, that is the question. And it begins with each individual. Each person has to reach out and touch the lives of those who have been left behind. And that's why it's so critical for us to get out of our own homes and have an impact in the lives of children who may not have the kind of support that we grew up having, where you can walk down the street and you know that when you get out of school, everybody is watching you. Because when the neighborhood I grew up with, and, you know, all the neighborhood kids went to Whistler School, which was, you know, within walking distance. We didn't have to be bused. So it was a route that everybody went going to school, and there were neighbors who were either they're sitting out on their front porch or they're looking out their window. But everybody was watched. So there was no, even if you had fights after school, you'd have adults that would come out and break up the fights after school. I mean, there was always some kind of adult presence there. And right. When you don't have that, then that's when you get these anonymous acts of violence. And, you know, everybody's afraid of the kids because they look at every child as a gang member and all that. And that's what's so destructive when we don't see our children as children anymore. Then they become criminalized. And I always look at everybody's got, where is your mother and father? Wherever they are, they exist somewhere. You know, nobody's anonymous. And yet we've allowed our neighborhoods to produce anonymous people where nobody knows anybody. And it's our fault. How is it you don't know who's living next to you? How do you, you don't know people in the apartment next to yours and you're living in a building? Distrust. You know, so these are things that we allowed to happen. We allowed ourselves to see each other as the enemy and as strangers. We have the power to change that. Each person has the power to go next door, ring the doorbell, introduce themselves, and talk to people. Say, well, look, this is my child, and, you know, we live here, and just wanted to say hi. We have the power to do that. We choose not to out of fear. Why are we fearing people? Why are we assuming that everybody is the enemy? So we have to change how we think, and then we can change the reality that we have created. But it takes a decision. And just like the pain that we talked about earlier, Minister Cynthia, the pain that your body gives you that tells you that there's something wrong on the inside, it's there for a reason so you can fix it. The pain that we're feeling in our communities is telling us there's something we have to fix. We have to fix this distance, this wall that we have allowed to be put between us and our neighbors to make our neighbors stranger. We don't know the name of our child's friends. We don't know the name of our neighbor's children. So when things happen, you know, our house is broken into and nobody speaks to anybody, so we don't know who's doing it. And in fact, if we knew our neighbors, they would not be strangers. We would not fear them. So we're feeling pain to let us know we have to change something. Something's broken inside us. Our relationships that are broken need to be fixed. And we're going to keep feeling that pain until we fix it. So you're absolutely right. Well, thanks for calling in, Ms. Susanna.
Okay, great. Have a good
one. I know you're always doing great things, so keep up the good work.
Great, thank you.
Yes. And we're going to take another caller at area code 904-303. Thank you for listening to The Female Solution. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
Yes, sister. My name is Tahaka Amanayo Bay, and I've been sitting listening to your broadcast. And I think that some of the...
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, my sister's in Jacksonville. All right, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you've got the program down there where you all are actually demonstrating how to live as a community, correct?
Yeah, we have the taking our neighborhoods, because we don't have any communities inside the United States, and we're taking our community, our neighborhoods, and we're transforming them into communities. We're planting our gardens, and we are getting the participation, protection, from that particular neighborhood, so that we can eventually, our main purpose is to eventually become a self-sustaining community, protected community in that particular sphere. And it involves the men taking responsibility for our protection and defending the community, watching what we're doing, protecting the women and children, and eventually disconnecting from the grid, providing our own food and water and our own stores.
Mm. Now, that's really where we need to be moving to. And I think that's very courageous what you all are doing, because it's providing a model of independence. And, you know, the reality is as long as we're depending on other people to do it, it will not happen because their agenda is not necessarily for us to be economically strong and self-sustaining. Right now, we've got a country that is being financed by a growing prison industry. And so that being the case, when we see the disconnection we have allowed to happen in our neighborhoods where no one knows anyone and everybody's living at this point of survival and desperation, and then you've got this inflow of guns from manufacturers that have chosen to position themselves around our urban areas, you have a recipe for self-destruction. And the only way we can circumvent that is to do what you and your group are doing, which is plan to be independent and then interdependent so that we're producing our own food and making sure we're providing our own purified water and policing our own neighborhood so that we know the residents where we live. This is the answer. And I'm grateful that the men in your community have taken that step. What was it that motivated them to decide to just do this? Was it one incident or a series of things that happened?
Well, we've been I'm a minister of education for the state of Florida for the Morris government. And we look at ourselves as a people, as a nation, and we monitor us as a nation, and we look at everything across the country involving us as a people, specifically, not being any multicultural, not dealing with anything religious, just as a specific people nationally. And we found out that we have been designated as a permanent underclass of people. And we are suffering from a massive assault that's happening inside the home, dividing separating the children and causing the total destruction in order to make us a permanent slave inside this country. So what we decided to do is, after surveying the damage of what was going on from city to city and the shootings and the foreigners moving into our neighborhoods and taking money out of the neighborhoods, we knew that somebody had to do something. So what we decided to do was create a model for people to come here and see how we are doing this, and so you can go back to your city and set these things up, and we can create a network where we can create our own food industry, our own trucking industry, our own protection, our national syndication, the whole thing, in order to survive as a nation of people. And all too often we talk about our individual circumstances and the little nuts and bolts and wiggle pins of what's going on with us individually, but we're going to have to start looking at ourselves collectively as a nation. Now, it's true that we don't communicate that much with our neighbors, and all this is a part of the assault, but we cannot waste any time worrying about it and wringing our hands over it. We got to get busy, and we have to go to work. And there's an industry that's available, because right here, and I know this is going on all over the United States, a lot of your grocery stores have the vegetables and seafood and meats and stuff that they're importing from other countries. So if you are growing it yourself organically and using your own urban aqua and hydroponics and putting that to work and being self-sustaining organically, why would they go outside the country, these companies go outside the country and import this stuff when they can buy it right there from you? So if we can duplicate this model across the United States, and we're going to have our summit here, the second summit on August the 16th through the 18th, so you can come here and see this thing, and so that you can go and do the same thing in your city. So this is why we did what we're doing, based on the question you had asked me.
I see. Well, it's definitely necessary to have a model. People need to know how to do something and need to know how to overcome some of the pitfalls when we try to do it. Now, one of the things that comes up when people talk about a unified effort toward the independent functioning, you have people who tend to argue, you know, the biggest obstacle for us putting this kind of thing in motion is that as soon as the idea is presented, everybody's got a different point of view as to how it should be done. We get to the point of arguing about it, and then it just doesn't get done. How did you all get past that self-destructive behavior pattern when it came to organizing men to be security for the community?
What we did was we broke down all the barriers. It didn't matter if you were a Baptist, if you was a member of the Moorish Science Temple, if you were a Presbyterian, if you were Catholic. It didn't matter about none of that. We're dealing with the survival of a nation of people. We just happen to all look alike. So we came in and people began to tell about their different things that they have. But as far as the arguments, we didn't have any of that because there were no barriers. There were no fences. There were no and even with the community, there is no – we don't need a gated community because the men represent the gate.
That.
And so this is what we did here. We don't, you know, there were no arguments. There were no debates. There was nothing about how we ought to do this. Everybody understood that it needed to get done. We didn't have time to talk about it. Let's get busy and do it. And so that's what we did. So we got the ground broke. We got the fruit and vegetables growing. And we got a caretaker right next to it. And we're steady increasing, and we're encouraging other areas right in the same city to begin to grow right where you are. So we just simply didn't have time for a debate about getting started about nothing. We invested in time in that.
So you didn't let any distractions keep you from getting it done? You just knew it had to be done and just did it?
We were moving in such a large numbers and so fast. When nobody, you know, dare to get in the way about arguments, they get ran over. We didn't have time for that.
So when you chose what to grow, was everybody pretty much in agreement that the kinds of fruits and vegetables that needed to be grown? Because, I mean, you know what grows there in Florida. So.
Well, we didn't. There was no debate about that. We got all kind of stuff. We got your greens, we got your tomatoes, we got your squash, we have herbs. So we covered the entire gambit of what it will take to sustain life. So there was no need for a debate about that.
Just now, we've talked about doing that here in Chicago, and then the subject came up, well, how do you keep people from stealing the food, or how do you keep people from vandalizing the garden? The issue always comes up of how do you deal with people who are just not of the consciousness to be self-helping. There are people, for whatever reason, think destruction. How do you deal with that?
That's where the men come in. See, when you do this thing here, all you have to do is if you got a one square block, we say we have one square block, okay, and you're going to get at the top of the block if there's a vacant lot or what have you, you're going to start growing there. We're going to need somebody that's right next to it, and we're going to sell them on the idea that they're going to benefit this thing. We need them to protect it until we get everybody else in place, and we're only concerned about that square block. If somebody is coming in and want to sell some dope, that's fine. Just explain that to 25 men. If somebody is coming in to run for public office, that's fine. But before you put down any signs or run for anything, sit down with the community members and let us know what you're prepared to do for this particular neighborhood in exchange for the votes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not dealing with the banks. We're dealing with our own credit unions. And eventually, we won't need 911. We won't need anybody running in to do anything for us because the men are taking responsibility for the survival of themselves, their family, and everybody in their satellite.
Mm.
That's how you do that. See, if you can't go in Little Italy and say, well, I'm gonna go over there and set up a store and start selling cheap merchandise and stuff like that, because these men go coming there won't know, well, what you're selling. You know, who told you you can come up in there and set up a shop?
Right, in our territory. That's right.
Right. You can't go up in there and say, well, look, I'm going up here. I'm gonna stand on the corner up here in Little Italy and sell my cocaine right here. Nope. Because you had the answer to that. And see, what we have going here is we have some misconceptions inside the United States about a lot of things. The first misconception is we're under the impression that a woman can raise a child or raise a son. She can't. She can sustain him. That takes the parental coalition of a man and a woman.
Yeah.
So that's been under attack, and we have to get this thing in our head. We have a whole lot of beliefs and stuff in our head. We say, well, I'm a Christian. Okay, if you're a Christian, tell me everything that you know about Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in Jesus. Okay, put your Bible down and tell me everything you know about him historically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get a college degree. I'm going to Harvard. I'm going to get a bachelor's. Okay, why would the murderers of your ancestors create something that will educate you to the point of taking over this nation? He didn't. Because the first thing you were supposed to be taught from kindergarten was who you was and who your ancestors were. You were supposed to be connected to your ancestors and your cousins. That was disconnected. When you went in there, they told you about Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, everything to connect you to this country, because he designed his school system to benefit him and his interest. So what we have to do is we're going to have to create our own schools. We're going to create our own self-sustaining communities, and everything is going to have to be done for self. Then we got this big major notion in our head that we should be multiculturalism and we should be conservative. I'm trying to figure out what is it that we don't have anything, so what is there to conserve?
Yeah, what are you conserving? Because conserve means to keep as is. So
that's right.
If you want things to be as is, why would you want things to remain this way?
That's right.
Especially if it's keeping us in a state of poverty and bankruptcy and dependency, why would you want to conserve this? So we need to rebuild something that enhances and sustains us, which makes sense. And I do understand that people, they need to be brought up to a level of understanding about the fact that not everybody means your well-being, especially if they're profiting from your distress. So there's resistance on purpose, and it's not our imagination. People operate from a standpoint of greed. And if it's profitable for a large mass of people to remain not educated, not given life-sustaining skills, so they can pretty much be a slave underclass that basically works and hustles so that someone else gets wealth, then that's the system that's going to be sustained. So unless we create something else, we're going to be trapped in that system where we're constantly hustling low-paid jobs to barely earn a living, not have enough time to raise our children so someone else can stay wealthy. that's the system that we are living under. And unless we do as your community is doing and create something that we control, we're going to always be at the mercy of other people. So I appreciate the fact that, you're providing that model. Now, Brother Tahaka, how do we get you to Chicago to, teach these men who keep talking about doing this but can't get past the argument stage and actually do it?
All right. Well, I travel across the United States. And all you got to do is contact me. And you bring me there. I'll be there for about 1 or 2 days. And I'll bring my archives there. And we can set it up and you can take a look. But when we come there, we're going to, you know, there's no need to waste any time about arguing and stuff, because we're in a situation now about life and death. And all you have to do is contact me. You can call me if you want to bring me to town. You can call me at area code 904-303-9061. And please call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because I host my own Blog Talk radio show. And I teach contract law for the Moorish American government on Wednesday nights.
Well, give us that station.
That's Moorish Talk Live 100.
Moorish
Talk Live 100.
Live 100. And what's the call? What's the call-in number?
The call-in number. Just a second. Let me get that there for you.
Yeah,
call me at 310.
310.
982.
4184. And that's Wednesday evenings.
No, that's a Blog Talk radio show. In order to catch the teachings for the government on Wednesday night, you'll have to dial into a national conference call. That number is 559-726-1200, and the access code is 107985. That's 559-726-1200, access code 107985.
Okay, I got it down. Now tell us again the Blog Talk radio station. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/Moorish Talk Live 100.
Yeah, that's the name of my show, Moorish Talk Live 100.
And what time does it come on?
My show airs at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you send a friend request on Facebook, you can listen to some of the previous broadcasts. You can send that through to Tahaka Amana L. Bay, T-A-R-H-A-K-A. And Amana is spelled A-M-A-A-N-A and then L-E-L and then P-E-Y.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We're going to be tuning in, and we'll have you back on, and we'll be talking further about your community there in Jacksonville, Florida. And I think that you all have done a tremendous job in providing the model that we need across this nation. So thanks so much for joining us today. You've certainly added some spice to the show and some real depth and wisdom, and we appreciate all that you do.
Thank you, sister.
Yes, sir. And I want to thank all of our callers today in participating in this show. And, of course, we want you to tune in again tomorrow morning and join us again at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time for another stimulating discussion as we seek to bring together and heal our family. Thanks to my co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, and so grateful for your new eyesight now.
Thank you for all of your prayers.
And for her insight, you can reach her at 312-802-4743. That's 312-802-4743 for your personal spiritual counseling. And thank you to my producer, Ms. Darlene Perkins. Thanks for all you do. And for all of you who have listened in and called in and shared your wisdom, we thank you so much. We couldn't exist without you. And so join us again tomorrow, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. Of course, you can always reach me on my website, www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Until tomorrow, may you all have a blessed day.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime, violence, and poverty if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, and my co-host, Minister Cynthia Marie Williams, every morning, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we connect with women everywhere. Together, we can heal our world. But first, we need to heal ourselves. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and be a part of our discussion. 347-539-5639.